Welcome to the podcast series, Blindingly Obvious. My name is Minnie Baragwanath, and this series is based on my book by the same name. Blindingly Obvious is my story. It is a candid and deeply personal story about my life and work as a blind woman, social entrepreneur, and innovator. I wrote it in order to share my experience of blindness with others, and in the hope that it might raise awareness and invite others to actively create a more accessible future, one that is full of possibility. A wonderful voiceover artist and now friend of mine, Romy Hooper, has narrated my full book, all 24 chapters. I do so hope you enjoy listening. It is an absolute pleasure to be able to share it with you.
15. An unbearable choice. Only now, with the vast benefit of hindsight, can I see that this is the point in my story, in my life, when the word with dramatically enters my world. This is when it takes hold and shakes my very foundations, my relationship to blindness, to disability, and the world around me. Looking back, this is when I come to see why the little word with is of such powerful significance to me today. It was only once I discovered that the word with has origins in Middle German, where it is directly associated with midwifery, safe, supported, childbirth, that something started to make sense for me, and a deep truth started to reveal itself. I started to reflect on it, both literally as well as metaphorically. The actual birth of a child and the safe birth of new life, new ideas, a new way of being in the world. At that moment, I realized why with had been playing on my mind, in my heart and in my soul. With was offering up an entirely new way for me to look at and make sense of my life, my work and my relationship with the world. With is, to my mind, one of the most potent concepts in our world today. I can now see that at the very heart of with is what it means to be in relationship. And for me in particular, to be in relationship with blindness and accessibility social change. I did not know about this concept until very recently. I did not know that it was what had been missing from my life and work at critical times. I did not know that if I had been able to express my need to be with earlier in my life, things may have been quite different. While there is no such thing as a silver bullet in social change, there are golden keys. Golden keys have the power to unlock and reveal different futures, and I believe that with is just such a golden key. When I look back on my life, I can now see when with entered my world and my work, and when I bravely chose to turn that key for the very first time. It is critical to understand that, first and foremost, with is actually about our relationship with ourselves. I do not think we can truly be with others unless we understand how to be with ourselves. When we choose to be with ourselves, we strive to stand in truth. We strive to be kind to ourselves, to calmly state our basic needs and to challenge ourselves to step up. We listen deeply to what the world needs and to ascertain our place in that world. In the words of the amazing Margaret Wheatley, we get to choose who we want to be. However, as I was soon to realize, in order to choose with, and in order to put my faith in myself and in a better future, I first had to choose without. I had to make a deeply personal sacrifice. This choice was to prove devastating. With, I now know, is not for the faint-hearted. By this stage, in my early 30s, I'd been in a number of different relationships with boys, and I guess some men. Yes, I had received marriage proposals. Yes, I had at times been rejected, and at times I had rejected others. Trying to be in relationship with people was really all a bit of a minefield. I was now living with my boyfriend, James, not his real name, in his terribly fabulous New York-style inner-city apartment, decked out in classic mid-century furniture and objets d'art. We had met a year or two earlier at a party, listening to Thievery Corporation, Sola Rosa and Salmonella Dub, as well as reading extracts from Rumi, the Persian poet and mystic. Looking back, that does make it sound terribly romantic. I thought we were in love. There were certainly things we loved about each other. We did sometimes have fun together. We did sometimes laugh together. But often we did not. One night we went to a party at James's friend's house in Ponsonby. As was often the case, he disappeared off somewhere and left me to try to navigate through an unfamiliar house in the dark, among people I did not know well. James was not great with my blindness. After some disagreement at Splore, the outdoor music festival, some weeks earlier, he had also just walked off. In fact, he had left me alone in the dark in the middle of a forest. He did not see that this was cruel. Most of James's friends were musicians and designers, all very talented and very much a clique. I was kind of a new girl. On this occasion, I left the party early. James stayed on, and as was the case in the early 2000s, took ecstasy or LSD or something. He did not make it home till much, much later. When he came upstairs to the loft bedroom, he was out of it, and we fought. I was tired of what seemed like his unkindness and his indifference about having me in his life. I felt he found my blindness not only inconvenient, but deeply irritating and burdensome. Perhaps he just wanted someone in his life who did not require, well, anything. Then, some weeks later, I suspected I might be pregnant. I have always had an extreme sensitivity to smell, but this was another level. Every smell now overwhelmed me. James was out with friends at a bar when I took the test alone at home. When I saw the result, I tried repeatedly to call him. He ignored my calls. I tried his best friend and asked him to let James know the news. James stayed out all night and never called me back. The next day he was icy cold. He made it clear he wanted nothing more to do with me or our baby. From that moment onwards, I went to all the appointments and scans alone. All except one. The right to choose. Four small words with such powerful life-changing consequences. But what was I choosing? I thought it was a choice about whether or not to have a baby, but it was not. I felt overwhelmed by the responsibility to try and choose what kind of life I and my baby might have. What would the future be for a single blind mother? How would I provide and care for a baby when I struggled to buy food from the supermarket, with its tiny writing and packaging? How would I provide for a baby when I could not drive? How would I keep a wee toddler safe when they ran at full speed across the road and out of my limited sight range? How would I know if I needed to rush my baby to the emergency room if I could not see the results on a thermometer? And how could I provide, when I was still earning such a meager salary in a job where I faced discrimination on a daily basis? How? 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 How could I choose this? I couldn't. Who would be with us? I did not want to be a terrible mother. I did not want to be a disabled, blind, solo mother. That is what I was choosing. Strangely, as the date for the termination drew nearer, I remember James telling me to be careful and not to eat seafood or soft cheese, to stay away from coffee and alcohol as we prepared for the termination. I went along with it. I conscientiously stayed away from these dangerous foods, things that could harm the developing fetus. It was almost as if, for a brief few weeks, we played out the fantasy of being young, expectant parents. I liked feeling as if he cared for me, for us. The fantasy did not last. We sat in a small room. The nurse handed me two tablets. She told me that once I had taken them, it was too late to change my mind. They strapped me into a hospital bed and I started to howl. A terrible, agonizing pain tore through my heart and soul as I lay there. Every fiber of my being wanted this baby. But it was too late. I was too late. The die had been cast. I screamed out in the hospital room, heartbroken and devastated. Help me. James sat beside me, not looking at me, not touching me, not holding my hand. The nurse gently placed my cold, limp, empty hand in hers, calmly, lovingly trying to soothe me. I saw her shoot a disbelieving look at James, now simply a small boy, sitting alone in a sterile, white abortion clinic. That night, James and I went to our local Indonesian restaurant. It was too hot. There was no air. I felt faint. I felt stifled. I felt lightheaded and weak. I slowly stood up in the tiny restaurant and moved towards the bathroom at the back of the room. Before I could get there, I collapsed on the floor in a pool of blood. I never told anyone about what happened that night at the restaurant. I felt ashamed. Instead of going home to sleep, to grieve, to rest, we had gone out to dinner. I wanted so desperately to prove that I was okay, that I was robust, that I, Minnie Amanda Jane Baragwanath, am not a burden. I wonder, is this perhaps how battered women sometimes feel when they keep going back to their abuser? Why had I put myself in such danger? Why had I put my well-being so far down the list? Why had I not stood up for myself and my baby? What was wrong with me? Was my self-worth so terribly, terribly low? Why couldn't I ask for what I wanted? What we needed? One of my greatest fears in life is to be a burden. Whether this idea has come about due to my blindness, my disability, or whether it is something much deeper, much more ancient and primal, I'm not too sure. I do know, as a disabled person, that we are all too often framed as being difficult, a cost and a charity case. Our fundamental needs are not seen as mainstream or acceptable. They are seen as a nice to have, something we might choose to do out of charity one day if we're in the mood, but might not choose to do the next. Our fundamental needs, my fundamental needs, are always at the mercy and the whim of others. I now know that this fear of being a burden, this fear of stating my basic needs, this belief made a terrible home inside me for a very, very long time. My desire to end my life, my ongoing bouts of depression, and now the termination of my baby and this unhealthy relationship were all testimony to this feeling, this story, this powerful, culturally ingrained narrative in our society. I had internalized the soft bigotry of low expectations. What would it take to turn this situation around? What would it take to create a life where I did not feel like this? Was it possible to create a truly accessible world where blind women really could have their basic needs met and where they really could choose? I never did have children. James, on the other hand, went on to have a baby with someone else, a year after we broke up.
I do so hope you enjoyed listening to my book and podcast series, Blindingly Obvious. It has been an absolute privilege to be able to share this with you. Listen out for the next chapter coming soon. If you would like to purchase the entire book in audio or an array of other accessible formats, including New Zealand Sign Language, or to learn more about my work, visit my website, minnieb.co.nz. Thank you for taking the time to listen and to be with me. See you next time. With love, Minnie B.